Welcome back, everyone. My name is Kaz.
This is Medibot.
And this is episode 97 of the Skulls Cast.
Yeah, 97.
I'm pretty sure, but I mean, 93 is still like missing or something. I don't know what happened.
We don't talk
that.
About 93.
You know, we're gonna put 93 in a box. We're gonna wrap that box in chains. We're gonna tie those chains to the bottom of the ocean with twine. The twine is perverted.
How much twine would you need to tie something to the bottom of the ocean?
You know, I'm pretty sure we could calculate that. I mean, honestly, maybe not all that much, depending on what it is. Because, I mean, if we're tying it to the bottom, like...
Right, but how big's the bottom?
Well, we're not tying it to, like, the entire bottom. You just have to anchor
it
to the
bottom. I'm saying we are tying it to the entire bottom.
That's... Okay. Fine. That's a calculation that I would love to perform for you someday.
Now we'll just need it as an exercise.
A topographic map of the entire damn ocean.
No, only the bottom. I only need the bottom.
The entire bottom of the ocean.
I am keenly interested in this bottom.
I'll tell you about bottoms that I'm interested in. What are we actually talking about tonight as a topic, though?
Well, I've got something I want to talk about.
I think that we should let you just spin your wheels and fly away on it, on a wheeled vehicle that also somehow flies on wheels.
Kaz, I'm going to tell you about a video game.
Excellent. Bring it on.
All right, so this video game is not a recent game at all. I first played it back in high school, and I've replayed it a few times since then, including just in the last few days. This video game is Castlevania Circle of the Moon.
Oh.
It's on the Game Boy Advance.
You had me fooled. I thought we were going to talk about a different Castlevania.
I want to talk about this one.
Then we're talking about this one.
So Castlevania Circle of the Moon. It's on the Game Boy Advance. It was pretty early on the Game Boy Advance. And it's your Castlevania. It's what is now modernly referred to as your Metroidvania, Castlevania game where you run around some kind of environment, generally a castle, sometimes not a castle, and there's a map and you have to explore, and you can't get everywhere at first, just like in the Metroid, but then you get more powers that let you get everywhere, just like in the Metroid. I say modernly referred to as a Metroidvania because prior to this, in terms of Castlevania games, you know, we had the classic stage-based ones, and then Symphony of the Night, and then this. So it wasn't really
right.
A genre yet.
Yeah, Symphony of the Night was like the great granddaddy of all these GBA Castlevania titles.
And later DS.
Right, and like from then, honestly, Circle of the Moon and on, everything after that had to be like it, with this map that you could actually call up by pressing the select button, by the way.
Yep. Gotta bring up the map.
Yeah, it took me like 3 playthroughs to find that.
Nice.
I
am a constant map checker.
I didn't know.
Circle of the Moon, few things about it. One is that on the original Game Boy Advance, which did not have any sort of lighting mechanism to it, the game was kind of hard to see. But this, if you're on a system that does have lighting to it, then the palette is fine and it's great. But also, it's like, this was my first Castlevania game. This is actually the first Castlevania game that I had ever played in my life. I don't know how much of other Castlevanias I had even, like, seen at that point, let alone played. So, Circle of the Moon was my first Castlevania, and so I didn't think it was weird that you weren't a dude named Belmont. I didn't think that was strange at all. You're like Hugh und Nathan und you're no, you're Nathan Graves,
who's just this
dude who's best friends with Hugh Baldwin, son of Morris Baldwin, who, if you've read Bram Stoker's Dracula, is like a guy in the book. And so this game also is one of the very, very few that really tries to make this game about Dracula have anything to do with the book about Dracula. But basically, you're Nathan Graves, who's just this clumsy idiot. You're an oaf. You're a doofus, a dingbat, a dunce.
Now, hold on. Nathan and Hugh were trained to fight and hunt vampires.
Right,
in some
so they
order.
Show up, and the first thing that happens is they get exploded from the feet up.
Well,
and they get dropped in a hole.
They get dunked on, maybe, but this is no simple vampire they're dealing with. This is
This is the Dracula,
the tallest.
But importantly, like, you start off with like nothing. In this game, you can jump and you can walk. And I say walk specifically because running comes later.
Oh, yeah.
You have
to
get...
Oh, man. Wait, can't you slide before you can walk or run?
Yes.
I think so,
yeah. Start off with sliding, I want to say. But not with running.
You slide everywhere and then later on you can run places.
Yeah, you even got a double tap to run, which mm-hmm. leads to all kinds of wacky input buffering trickery. But what I really like is just how much, like, you have to earn the ability to run. Mind you earn it around, you know, 5 minutes in. But you have to deal with actual threats to your life.
Yeah, they really build you up with nothing from nothing. The first monster you come against is Bomb Skeleton.
Yeah, who, by the way, is like not even trivial. It'll kind of mess you up.
Yeah, no, I like that. And the approach to them is kind of awkward because you're falling and they're tossing up. So
yeah,
they're
they have a pretty
like
good
coming,
angle on you,
coming right at you.
But it has, you know, a lot of the features from Symphony of the Night are still in here, right? You got your map and your save points and you have health and also magic and also hearts, so you can carry a sub-weapon just like in classic Castlevania. But one thing that the game doesn't have that Symphony of the Night has that most other of the Egavanias, Metroidvanias, whatever, do have... You can't collect money in Circle of the Moon. There's no shop.
Hmm. Yeah, there's no vendor at there's, all. I mean, they already have, like, a ton of resources, right? So, like, hearts are your... You have hearts or hearts. You have magic separate from hearts.
Yeah.
So we already are dealing with, like, a ton of resources. And I kind of understand why they wouldn't want to, like, throw money on top of that as well.
And then you, as far as equipment, it's also way scaled down from Symphony of the Night. You have armor, right hand, and left hand. And that's it. So armor is like body.
Yeah,
body armor.
I didn't even remember the hands. Ha.
Yeah, and then you have your right arm, left arm, and like you can put like a ring or a gauntlet mm-hmm. on each of those slots. And then past that, you just have usable items. Which are, again, since there's no shop, you just have to get them off monsters, which doesn't actually happen that often. So any item you get is a gift. You get a potion, which was
potion is a big deal.
20 hit points. You start with around 200, and like a hit at this point is 20 hit points, and like just potion. And as you know, by the end of the game, you're going to have like 600 hit points, and a tough enemy might nug you for 100 of those. Potion restores 20 hit points.
Yep, still restores 20. And it also like stacks up to 9?
No, you can have more than 9.
Really?
Yeah.
Huh. I didn't remember. I know that
you
in some
others... You
probably
won't get that many.
Well, sure, but like, you know, I remember the item cap being really low in some of the other games. I haven't played this as recently as you have, so.
And so, like, we have this huge restriction on just getting items, and you have to earn the ability to run, but then you get like a double jump, and you get a nice. They do this one nice thing that I really like as this sort of intermediary vertical mobility sort of lock key mobility upgrade, which is the wall jump. Which you can't like chain out like you can in, say, a Mega Man X game. It's very much a you kick off the wall and you're going
right.
That
it's so more it's more of like a triangle jump.
Yeah.
If you've experienced
so
that from video games, but
if you have a narrow vertical passage, yeah, you can get all the way up, and this is by design, of course, but it's not, you can't just arbitrarily scale, you know, sheer walls with this. You gotta wait way later before you just all get right. the up boots.
It makes you think really hard about what your capabilities are and what the geometry of the levels that you're in has been like up to that point.
Right. And importantly, it's like, you know, in these Metroidvanias, whatever, any mobility upgrade you get is pretty much always also a like area unlock mechanism. You get the double jump, and now you can get up to that higher platform and get to this entirely new section of the castle, or you get the wall kick and similar. But at the same time, even things like the wall kick can be useful in a dealing with enemies scenario. So it doesn't feel like it's just this key item. It's also this general tool that you have at your disposal all the time, and that using it correctly all the time is better than only thinking of it when you're trying to get to a new area.
Okay, there is one of the game's upgrades that, well, no, there's one that's like a literal key.
Yes, there's one that is the literal key that unlocks the door.
Then there's the one that lets you push heavy things.
Oh, yeah,
that's,
okay,
that's
one's
not
just
like
a key.
Generally applicable.
But that also gets used as a puzzle mechanism in addition to just push
yeah,
the block
yeah.
out of the way.
I guess that's something.
So,
But then,
not so much in fights, though.
And then the one that drains the lake. Not drains the lake. It turns the poison not poison
right.
anymore.
It turns the poison into water. That one is really just a key, because going through that area without unpoisoning the water is challenging.
It's supposed to not be possible, but
it's supposed to not be possible. If you're a jerk, and at that point you have something, you either feel like spending a lot of healing items, or you have healing magic available to you, and I'll get to magic in a second, then yeah, you can just kind of keep going, and you'll hate it. You'll be like,
you find, like,
wow,
one safe spot, and then just plant your butt there for a while.
Like, pray you don't get hit by an ice projectile that freezes you and knocks you back into the poison.
Then Nathan Graves stood still for several hours, healing his wounds, trying to vomit up all the last of the poison.
Yes, vomit up all the poison. Right, so I mentioned that there's you got your magic meter in this game, and the way magic works is with what I think is a beautiful, absolutely wonderful, I love this system. It's called the dual setup system, and the idea being that you have these two sets of magic cards. One of the sets of magic cards is made out of Roman gods. And you got your Apollo and your Jupiter and etc. And the other set of cards is made out of magical beasts. You have plants and animals. So I say include plants because the first one that came to mind was the Mandragora.
Mm.
And the griffin, the manticore,
the black dog.
The black dog. The thunderbird. And so you combine a god code with an animal code to get a magic effect. And the god code sort of determines what kind of effect you're going to get. And then the animal code determines sort of the elemental affinity of the effect. And in some cases, it really is just like, I think, Apollo gets you, one of them gets you like elemental damage on your whip. So, Fire plus, you get your Fire Whip, get your Ice Whip, get your, Flower Whip that blooms roses at the end, and it's all pretty straightforward like that. Sometimes it's a little less straightforward, in terms of what it does. I know the Roman god that gives you a shield powers, for example, if you pick Golem, which is the earth element, you don't get a bunch of rocks floating around you. You get a quadruple invulnerability time after getting hit, which do not sleep on this, by the way. That was very important in my most recent playthrough. That's quadruple invulnerability time. That's a lot longer than you're used to.
That does sound kind of crazy. Okay, so the I guess we haven't all we also haven't mentioned you find these cards as random drops from certain monsters. You can find a maximum of one of each. As soon as you like pick up one,
Once
then
you have
no
it, you
more
have it.
of that type will spawn. So this can also make different playthroughs of the game rather unique. I want to say that Apollo Salamander is like guaranteed, and from there it's like whatever you find.
It's not. It's virtually guaranteed, because there have definitely been cases where the first few enemies that I've killed that are eligible to drop it did not. But it never took terribly long. So those are extremely high drop rate ones. But Salamander, Fire Element, and was it Apollo?
It could have been Hermes.
Hermes. But whichever one gives you like elements attached to your whip.
Yeah, it's like the and they have an order to them as well, so it's like the first one and the first one.
Right. And so you're gonna get this pair very early on, so you can start messing around and understand this idea of activate my cards, and then different things happen. And
Right.
importantly, they don't immediately tell you. It says just question marks first. Now, as soon as you do the thing or the thing triggers, then it gets a little description on
Yeah,
your menu
there's like
page.
a general button that activates it.
Yep,
Like you
you press
press
the
the.
L button to just turn magic on.
Yeah, and
And so.
sometimes that's sufficient, like the thing just sort of happens. Other times you have to perform some action before that will happen.
Yeah. So, for example, if we give you a fire whip, you have to hit whip.
Right.
Which is.
If you.
But
There.
with the quad invulnerability, you have to take a hit.
Yeah, if you turn on the one that gives you experience points as you walk, you have to not run.
You have
You have to
to
walk.
walk.
There's one that
Running is not walking.
there's one that regenerates you while you're standing still, so you have to
But it
hold
takes a
still
few
for a
seconds to kick
second.
in.
Yeah. So those are the okay ones. Then they have ones that are literally you have to do a Street Fighter input
Oh
in
yeah.
order to make this thing come
You
out.
go to down to a horizontal direction to up to attack, and you will do some kind of wacky thing.
Now, if you, like, I don't know, accidentally do this once while you have the magic thing equipped while you're trying to figure out how to do it, then it'll, once you do it once, it'll say on the menu how to do it.
Yeah.
I think
But you have
those,
to
that's
guess it
the,
in the first
that is
place.
the
And
least fair thing. That
it,
isn't.
like, I'm not going to defend that. I'm just going to put that out there. I'm not going
Yeah.
to defend that, because that's definitely on my first, on my very early playthroughs. I got that code and I'm like, it doesn't do anything.
Yeah, this
It
card
just
doesn't do
doesn't do
anything. It's
anything.
like I can't I've touched every button. I've performed every action. What are they trying to do? Like I didn't figure that out until I like looked it up in a game guide. And I'm like,
Yeah,
how the hell was I
I
supposed
also
to know
didn't
to do a
get that
Street
from a
Fighter
guide.
input?
And also the other awkward part is because it ends with up and attack, if you whiff it, you'll just get your sub weapon.
Yep.
Which can feel bad when you're trying to conserve hearts and use magic.
Right, conserve hearts through this, I guess.
Magic regenerates hearts.
Right. No, well, heart, you can get them by traveling and, getting...
Which you can't do in a boss fight.
Right. But the whole idea of conserving hearts brings us to, I think, the underpinning of all of this, which is the game's difficulty.
Sometimes this game is very, very willing to just kick your ass.
There are
some enemies that are really just...
There are some enemies that you should just run from.
Yeah.
Like...
Wind Devil? I think I fought one or two of them just to see if I could. Every other time, I just ran. I just got out of there.
Let's see.
Because it's like, what? He's going to fill the screen with a million, green crescents that will loop around and beat the crap out of me. And meanwhile, he's flying, in a wall, so I can't even get him.
Yeah, no, he appears in a couple awkward places for you.
Oh, God. Ice Devil is even worse, because he freezes you. And, getting frozen in this game, okay, you can't move. You gotta mash out of it. Okay, great. If you get hit while you're frozen, you take roughly quintuple damage.
Yeah, it's...
It hurts like hell.
It's ludicrous. Ice armor is pretty dangerous for the same reason, because they throw their spears in pairs.
Yep.
So if you get hit by both, you die. You are gone.
He gets you with the
he freezes
the
you
frozen armor
and then
two hit.
He crushes the ice that your body has become with other ice.
Yeah, which is why they don't actually introduce enemies that can freeze you until reasonably late in the game.
Yeah,
because getting frozen.
But even still,
it's
not like
close to a death sentence.
Right. It's not like you have any tools to mitigate what these enemies are doing. I can't put on my anti-freeze armor and then just be good against them forever.
Dodge or parry.
Yeah, you get better at the optics of jumping and whipping enemies because you've experienced more of them and you have a little more power in terms of hit points and magic. Your armor is a little better. I want to say your attack power is pretty flat though.
A lot of equipable items can increase your strength.
Yeah, and that does go up
as you level.
With level. But it does, it feels pretty flat. Very well controlled, I guess, I should say.
Yeah.
So by and large, it's not like you can't get a good angle on on their element types or whatever. You have to get better at dodging.
None of the equipment really deals with being strong or weak to a particular element. But yeah, so there are definitely enemies, just normal-ass enemies, that will definitely just tear you a new one. Mm-hmm. And they actually do a neat thing in the game, which is that at certain event flags in the game, they just start upgrading enemies in the castle.
Right.
And replacing them with nastier ones.
Right. There are a couple of places in particular where you would not... in a normal playthrough, you would not ever, return to these rooms. But if you ever do return to these rooms, there's a special and very powerful enemy waiting for you. I'm talking in particular about the Lilim Lilith and... I think there's one other. But those two for certain.
Yeah. Well, if you're secret hunting, you'll run into Lilith, because she's goading an HP up.
That's true.
And so, hope you got on your first run while you were being hounded by succubi trying to descend this corridor.
Yeah.
By the way, you ran
a
into
lot of,
your mom.
And some of that feels like the enemy AI is simply... It is so basic that it's impossible to deal with. Because they're just allowed... They don't care about your position that much. They just move very quickly and toward you generally.
Sometimes the flying enemies will just be like, I'm gonna dive kick you today.
Right.
Bam.
Whereas in newer Castlevania games, the enemy will I see you, and then they'll do their little dance in front of you and you have all the time in the world to dismantle them with moves, where the opposite is generally the case, where you have to stick and move like a madman. And he's just like, so help you, if you whip one time too many against this monster, they will now be in a completely other position, and you're ruined.
Right. Because you're not, like, you, even with all these nice upgrades that you get, you don't end up quite as agile as a, you know, as a Jonathan Morse, for example, or a Soma Cruz.
Right. There's
you're still kind of ponderous.
I don't think there's a backstep.
No, there is not.
No.
You jump away.
Yeah.
You get out. Like, you hop out of there.
The act of throwing out your whip is really meaty, you know, like that's a committal action. That's the kind of thing that I like about this game, by the way. I'm not trying to like diminish it.
But if you space it right, there are a lot of enemies where like you can just move correctly and space things right, and once you understand their ranges, you're the guy with the long-range weapon.
Yeah, and not only specific enemies, but specific rooms and combinations of enemies, too.
Right.
Like, you might find yourself saying, oh, I was just fine against this root armor, plant armor, or whatever, on his own. But suddenly, like, earth armor plus sniper fox, and I'm I've lost my angle.
Right. Or a lot of the enemies, many enemies can send projectiles at you that can go through solid surfaces. And you'll first encounter them in just sort of long corridors, and you're like, okay, whatever, I dodge over it, and it starts looping back, and so I jump over it when it comes back again, but no big deal. But then you'll fight them in these sort of more square rooms where you're sort of going through more of a maze in this single room itself, and suddenly those projectile casting enemies on the other side of the walls are kicking your ass. So you're trying to do like wall jumps and crap, and meanwhile they're shooting their ray gun at you.
They're taking pot shots from perfect safety. I think another like overarching aspect to all of this is that the map and the individual like rooms, the overall size of things, the map is huge. The rooms are huge. I remember feeling like this game was just really, really big. Or I was small.
If you're trying to get somewhere that doesn't have a convenient warp point, there are warp points in this game. Then yeah, it can feel pretty nasty.
Well, even like take this. You know the heavy blocks that we were talking about before?
Yeah.
Each one of, like, compare the size of that block to the size of, I wanted to say Jonathan Morris, but that's incorrect. Grant Dynasty, no. Nathan Graves.
Nathan Graves.
Compare him to that crate or whatever. The crate is huge!
Crate is as tall as you
and
are.
That crate is like the square unit of how this whole map is built. That's what I mean by the bigness. It's just, it's really big and blocky and has a lot of features and terrain to it. So not only I'm not trying to like take a shot at the travel time that you put into the game to get from place to place, which is substantial and feels like, oh my god, I'm lost again. But also just how that general geometry changes your approach to enemies and situations. Like, I think, for instance, the triangle jump simply could not exist in other similar titles on the GBA just because of the map being made out of those like huge squares.
Yeah, because it does kick you up and away and up a fair bit, so you need that vertical clearance for the move to really
like
make sense.
You would be too far away, and without like a specific visual example, I can't fully articulate my point. But no, it does. The game feels pretty big, Right. And you're
and
like,
I guess to, you know, to sort of complement that, is that it means that when the game does constrict your movement, you feel very constricted. You feel trapped.
Yeah.
When, like,
oh, man.
You're used to fighting guys in big open areas, and then suddenly we put you in a place with a ceiling that you barely fit under and make you fight Doom Armor or whatever down there.
Now you're in the murder hallway.
Now you're in the murder hallway, and we're going to shoot black holes at you from the tips of our swords 3 times a second. And that's where that quad invincibility comes in, because I'm just like, nope, 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 nope. One of you gets me, none of the rest of you do.
Okay, so let's see. We talked about the map and enemies and magic and your general movement.
Soundtrack. There are not a lot of different music tracks in this game, and I think part of that is being an early GBA game.
Right, and they also, and like, the sound chip on the GBA or sound card or whatever it is pretty poor, and so at its best, you frankly are getting like the best that this can produce.
Yeah, I think the overall the music, you know, like I said, they don't have a great variety of music tracks, but the ones that are in there are pretty good. Aquarius, being the best Castlevania 3 song, gets an appearance in this game.
Yeah.
And it's the version of it in Circle of the Moon is, I think, really good.
That's all fair to say. I'm not trying to diminish from the game itself. It's just the hardware it's on is like not capable of living up to how good the soundtrack is.
Going along with that, a lot of things you do in the game are gonna make the game slow down. The game wants to be so much, but it's on.
Yeah,
an early Game Boy Advance game.
They have
how
all
do
these
do this?
Like, anytime you have respawning monsters that can make particle effects happen, it's like, no.
Anytime you are using a shield magic.
Yeah, if you're one very useful shield magic in particular that I can think of just automatically made things slow down.
Right.
So you also, this was also like time magic basically, because you got to.
Right. It's your defensive magic because you're in bullet time.
Right.
The problem being that, like, quite often, even if you're not doing one of these things, if there's just enough going on the screen, it's going to slow down. And because it can depend a lot, you know, as soon as those things are off screen, you know, the game speed's going to go back to normal. And so it becomes a little awkward as you have to be ready for the game to go back to full speed.
Yeah, that almost becomes another skill in itself to master. And as the game, you know, grows in complexity, as you get into it, it might also maybe be priming you for that. I don't know how much of the slowdown understood in designing this thing.
I don't know. I think I would enjoy playing a version of the game that just doesn't have that slowdown. Even though it means that suddenly I have to dodge attacks a little bit more honestly in a lot of situations.
I hate to say it, but I don't think that this game can ever have an HD re-release. Now, I'm not saying that you cannot upgrade the graphics and the sound chip and, like, adjust some of the level design maybe in places where it gets too repetitive or doesn't serve purposes and insert your own Easter eggs and stuff. That can all happen. That's work that can be done. I don't think the essential experience of the game can be replicated in this way, because any HD re-release that's going to create Circle of the Moon while it gets rid of slowdown is also going to introduce all these quality of life features that we've come to know, and it's going to make Nathan move differently. You know, like he would.
No.
I know.
Nathan has to be a ponderous idiot.
He has to be kind of chunky.
Turn into a beautiful vampire killing god. That's the thing, is that you start off feeling like, you start off both being and feeling like this clumsy oaf, and by the end, like, a few things have changed, but mostly you have changed.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, yes, I am big and heavy and clumsy, and it doesn't matter, I will dodge all your crap anyway. I will just dance between your electro bolts and cyber bats and moon lasers. And I will just dance through all of that and then get in whip range and be like, tap, I got you with my whip. I got you.
It's a good feeling. I like the feeling of playing through and beating Circle of the Moon. You get extra moods after that.
Yeah, you start unlocking just alternate modes that do change your strategy a fair amount. I haven't played too many of those, but it's like there's one where your strength is low, but your magic power is high, and they start you off with all of the magic cards, and so you can just sort of go nuts on that. There's one where you have like a billion homing throwing knives, and everything else you can do sucks.
I have played all of those, so I can speak a little more to what those are about.
There's one where you can't use magic at all?
Yeah, that one, honestly, is easy mode, because you can't use magic, but they boost your strength a bunch. And so you're, like, you have a bunch of strength and defense, and you can just, like, you crush things. You're so powerful in that, and I'm like, what is stopping me? I'm just, like, running through this game. There is nothing in my way. And so that one feels like easy mode. Magician feels like hard mode almost, because you are puny, your whip does nothing. And what magician mode teaches you is specifically what magics key off of what stats. So any like effect that's generated by magic will key off of your intelligence stat, and so if you're using that, it's huge and you're golden. You'll actually get damage. Other things key off of your strength, actually, and just sort of add a small like modifier or bonus to it, and those are very poor. So in a regular playthrough, I have to pick god names at random because I don't remember specifically what they do. So like Hermes does like whip changes, and Diana changes your whip into a sword. Now In a normal playthrough, these are almost exactly the same thing, just with like graphical changes, basically. So like the whip changes color, and it's like, oh, okay, it's a whip. And then the whip changes into a sword, so now I'm wielding a fire sword instead of a fire whip, and it's not very much different. In magician mode, the whip changes, like the whip is always keyed off of strength, so your whip magic is awful. It will never do anything. Sword magic sometimes keys off of strength, because specific animation components are like the sword component, that's strength, the little particles that it throws, magic, and that's
yes.
And that's where you get the high damage. So you end up having like a sweet spot with your attack where they're just taking the intelligence based component of it, and it's like, what the hell? So that's what magician mode is all about.
Beautiful.
It's difficult, and I think you specifically, Medibot, would enjoy it a lot.
Yeah.
Then you have Fireball mode, which is where you get the homing throwing knives.
No, Fireball is magician.
Fireball
mode.
Is magician. Gradius, right?
Yeah.
Sorry, Gradius. Konami, Gradius mode. The first subweapon you find is a knife, and the second subweapon you find is also a knife. And once you get that one, your sub-weapon attack throws a powerful, fast-traveling, enemy-homing, screen-reaching knife.
Yeah, don't run out.
It's really good. Well, they give you a bunch more hearts, too.
Yes.
So, you end up doing that. That's also, like, I don't want to call it easy mode, even though I think it is easier than the base game. It's a lot different, because your way of approaching situations is always with this knife, and you can never like say, oh well, I'll just change up my sub-weapon and then go at them again. No, you won't change up your sub-weapon, because if you do that, you'll lose the knife, and that's like that's everything that you do. Then there's also thief mode, And
you have like high luck.
Yeah, they give you like generally crummy stats, but jacked up luck stats. So you're constantly finding like the best armor, the best potions. You can find magic even though your magic is kind of crummy. And that's the mode of the game that I think is, it might be the hardest, it might be the easiest. It's been too long for
luck me to, mode is always the hardest.
It's been too long that I've
unless we find the sword whose damage keys off luck.
Yeah, I don't think that exists.
In which case, luck
game
is now the easiest.
But yeah, it was a lot of fun. I remember luck mode being like a penalty kind of on top of the basic game, and then this huge reward when you actually beat something. It's like you got to steal his clothes, you got his best potion, all that. So no, I like all the different I like all the modes.
I do have some complaints about the game, in addition to like I guess the strictly technical issues, you know, vis-a-vis the slowdown. The cross is too good.
Yeah, speaking of like wanting to never switch your sub weapon.
Right. There are very, very few situations in the game where you want a sub weapon that is not the cross. And the cross deals good damage and, spaced correctly, a large quantity of hits.
Right. So
it does cost, I think, 4 or 5 hearts. This is worth it every time.
Right. As far as like, if we're trying to make a matrix of, like, here's the sub weapon and here's the different capabilities that it has, and you have like range, damage, cost, that kind of thing, the cross just like totally wins in all categories. It's not like a compare and like trade off one to get the other. No, it has the most damage, it has the best attack pattern, effectively has the best cost if you're talking about like ultimate damage output.
Right, hearts to, you know, damage ratio. There are rare situations where you would prefer the axe or the holy water that I've found. Just because you really need to go up or you really need to go down. But almost all of the time, the correct answer is to carry the cross with you until proven otherwise.
Right.
And they will only very rarely prove otherwise.
And I'm remembering in particular the cross being this incredible crutch against zombie dragons.
Oh god, yeah. Freaking zombie dragon.
Grab that fight.
What a good boss.
I want to talk about like feeling tiny.
Yeah,
and
we dump you in a room,
things,
and it's like, hey, here's this giant zombie dragon. Here's this other giant zombie dragon. Fight them
right.
Both.
We're
gonna
put
time
you in the middle of a basketball court, and then like fly jet engines into it, and you have to beat them up with a toothpick or something.
Right. Also, there's no safe spot. Why would we give you a safe spot? Keep dodging.
A safe spot would cheapen that fight significantly.
Yeah, if there was actually a safe spot, the fight would be meaningless.
Yeah.
You earn your safe spot by killing one of them.
And even then they'd change their attacks.
Right, oh, and then man, the other one's like, hey, oh, that looks good enough to eat. And it leans over, eats the other zombie dragon, gets most of its health back, increases its attack power. Like,
oh, that fight is so good and so challenging and so impossible to even think about without the cross.
God.
Jeez. So that was, yeah, that's kind of a beef.
Shield powers might also be a little too good.
I think,
compared to other magic you can use.
I think Jupiter Manticore is the problematic one.
Jupiter Manticore is definitely the big offender, Jupiter being the shield god and Manticore being the poison element, and you just emit this awful constant fart cloud that does, like, no damage? Very little damage, but one, it slows the game down to hell. Two, for things that where damage doesn't matter, where you're just trying to intercept destroyable projectiles, it will with almost guarantee that you will successfully intercept incoming projectiles with your fight cloud.
Yeah, it's again.
It also makes this constant like salt shaker noise, and it's miserable because you're winning and you're playing the game correctly. You're playing to win, but it's and you're going at like 10 frames per second, and you're like, oh, I wish I didn't have to do this to be perfect and God.
Mm-hmm.
But even like the fire shield, which just gives you two little orbiting things, is going to, one, intercept a lot, and two, if you're close to an enemy, actually does pretty good damage.
Yeah, but that's not, like, usually, that's not what you care about with that power. That's
right,
the thing. Like,
right.
we're trading...
That's not the problem.
We're min-maxing, honestly, right, with this power.
That,
like,
fire shield is not a problem in the same way that poison shield is a problem.
No, not even a little.
Although,
what other...
on my most recent run, my shield was fire shield. That was the only elemental shield I had. Although I did finally get a griffin shield, which is very interesting, actually. Because it gives you the dash shockwave.
Oh, right.
Importantly, only while you're dashing. If you're in the air, you're not dashing, and you don't get your shockwave. You have to be on the ground, and you have to be running, not walking. So it's not quite as wacky as the same version of this power in other games, where it's just this brilliant shield that makes you move lightning fast all the time, Black Panther Soul or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But that was pretty cool to mess with. But yeah, I was on Fire Shield as my shield, and it did work. But yeah, it's nothing compared to the raw defensive rudeness of the poison shield, which can probably... I don't know how we change that. I don't know.
I think the poison shield would have to be totally redesigned.
Like,
and that would also,
it's just a little,
like,
too good.
That would benefit from an HD re-release, because then they could change the hitboxes involved. Because I think one of the problems is that the poison cloud itself, in order to like look like a cloud, they made it out of like a whole bunch of spread out pixels, but since the pixels were all spread out, the sprite is huge. So the effect, the area of effect, is also huge.
that's our metric. It's a crate size sprite.
It is a crate size sprite.
Several times a second, that stays on screen for about a second and a half. And I think, I forget if it actually animates.
There are a ton of powers, so it doesn't surprise me that, you know, a couple of them are imbalanced or bobo or...
Oh, no, this is certainly my praise by faint damnation segment.
We could come up with, like, three total powers out of, like, 144.
Like, this is too good, this is too good. But, like, all... again, like you were saying, how because the cards are not these super guaranteed things, your different playthroughs end up kind of different because you just get dealt a different hand.
Yeah.
So this time around, I made heavy use of the down, forward, up, you know, special attack ones, because I just got that.
You got grenade or summon?
Grenade.
Oh, wow.
Or, like, it sort of does both with... Because with Salamander, for example, it threw a bomb.
Well, yeah, but I mean, that's definitely the grenade one, though.
Yeah, but with Golem, you do your pose and spears come up from the ground.
Huh.
And you're invincible doing it. Don't do this against your buddy. He'll just be in your hitbox. there are a lot of cases where that move is really bad. But yeah, that... was really the especially griffin with that like you throw out this little tornado that shoots a bunch of horizontal projectiles and it sort of stays in place and shoots projectiles for a while.
Man, I never
you
do
can
that.
Use it in the air and just be like, I'm throwing this up there and it's going to hit you a bunch and I'm going to fall back down. And so that there were a bunch of fights where it's like, I don't want to get anywhere near you, so here's a thing that makes me not have to get anywhere near you. But even, like, the grenade with Mandragora where you throw the rose, kind of good in a lot of weird situations where you need just a lot of small hits to break through. like enemy projectile fields, and then it'll still get hits on the guy.
Yeah, indeed.
So I can recommend
in that sense multiple playthroughs of the basic mode and also the extra playthroughs.
Yeah.
Which, I mean, that's also kind of good, kind of bad, because it's only after like a couple playthroughs that I think you'll really understand the map and like where to go. It does take a while.
Yeah. Like when you get your new mobility power, it's very much like, okay, did I get a horizontal or vertical mobility power? It's usually pretty easy to answer that question. Or did I get something that doesn't fit in that category? Like I got the cleansing amulet, or I pressed the button that made the sarcophagi explode.
Right.
But, you know, generally it's like, is this a horizontal or vertical, you know, movement thing? And then you check your map for all your not quite done horizontal or vertical spots, and you check them one at a time. You'll guess wrong like 5 times,
right,
and you get an MP up at the end.
And then also, if you didn't know that there was a map, it's just on you to remember where everything was and to try and like find something.
I don't recommend playing this game without the map.
I like the map feature of this game a lot. You would get my experience. So I think I'm going to change the map significantly and then republish the game, and then it will not have a map, and then you can have my experience again.
So that's
a ROM hack that I have to make, I guess.
There were so many times in the game where I'm in the situation where I have to like warp point to a convenient save point and then warp point back and then try and the devil. There's an enemy who's just called
Devil.
And it's weird because like up until this point there's been like Earth Devil, Fire Devil, Thunder Devil, Ice Devil, and they've been these like flying guys that attack with elements. Now this is just Devil. He is taller, and he is meaner, and he is stronger, and he will kill you. And there was one in the game that I know about,
mm-hmm,
and he's just in this hallway with a very low ceiling, and he can just instant transmission himself around and then just make explosions everywhere. And he'll hit you for like a fourth of your hit points
every
time.
Yeah, he has
and
the health.
And he guards a warp point.
I really hate to say this, but do you want to know the answer?
What's the answer?
If you run directly at him and never stop, the first thing that he does is teleport behind you, and you will be just out of range of his hellfire by the time it comes out.
I want to say I tried that.
No, you can just run at him.
I want to say I tried that. Okay, well there you
go. No. I mean, you can't even
other
jump.
Than that,
you have to run like you.
On the menu.
I know you have to run like you mean to tackle him with your body, which is really nerve wracking.
But I don't, and he knows that.
I know. That's why it didn't work.
In my heart, I had already accepted defeat.
The
I had
devil
already accepted
is,
that the
is
devil would
an
land
excellent
a hit
opponent.
On me.
He's so good.
But it's like even like just regular guys are good because they're in good combinations or in good environments.
Now I love that regular guys will kick your ass in this game.
Regular guys are beating you.
Okay.
And also
we have to...
like just running away is a good tactic a lot of the time.
It is. Now okay, we kind of have to wrap this up. So like I want to make sure that we get out all of our beeves.
Okay.
So is there any remaining? Any remaining beef?
Some of the writing's a little stilted.
Yeah, it's kind of sparse, I think.
But some of it's actually pretty decent. When it chooses to be terse, it works pretty well.
Mm.
When it's just like, you brought Jackal back. I'm like, yeah, I did. Because I hate all of you and I love chaos. He's like, also he gave me devil powers, so fight me now. She turns into like a giant devil riding on top of a skull that shoots lightning. And it's like, yeah, okay, that's a pretty sweet deal, but I'm still going to kill you. Yeah, so, like, minor things, like, some shields are too good and some magic powers are not intuitive as to how to get them to do anything. The cross is too good. Shows its technical limitations in a lot of ways.
That's a pretty good summary.
Other than that, I think this game is freaking brilliant.
Yeah. No, I really like this one too.
It's just real.
Go break it out. I should own this game at some point.
It's on your Game Boy Advanced.
Well, I don't know about that. I would probably do it on the Game Boy Player if I was gonna go that
route.
Right.
Although then you gotta deal with how you're doing your directions.
Oh no, I have to. The GigaQuad. I don't have my piece of the GigaQuad.
Yeah, neither do I. That's why I had to play it the old-fashioned way. They got my
Game
Boy Player.
Oh no.
I know. And now it's far away. It's in distant lands.
I forgot because I moved to distant lands.
You moved to distant lands.
Well, I think that pretty much wraps us up. So
Circle of the Moon, my first Castlevania, my first Metroidvania. I'm going to go ahead and say it's the best Metroidvania. Come at me.
Yeah, well, I'll come at you later with my next review.
All right.
Until that time, skulls.
Skulls.